Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. We like to say we're a nation of laws, but it's not quite so simple. Laws are written and passed by legislative bodies, then approved by the executive branch, which is also charged with carrying them out, partly through administration, partly through law enforcement. Then if law is broken, or people disagree about what it means, there are the courts to resolve the dispute. Those who work with specific elements of this structure often see it differently, like the various parts of an elephant. But Mike McGrath has seen a lot of the elephant. Law school, attorney for low-income clients, then Montana Assistant Attorney General from 1977 to 82. He was elected to 5 terms as Lewis and Clark County Attorney, beginning in 1983, then 2 terms as Montana Attorney General. Mike was elected to an 8-year term as Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court in 2008. This year, he's running unopposed for a 2nd term. Chief Justice McGrath, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
Well, thanks, Brian.
You're a Butte native, if I've got that correct.
That is correct.
How was it growing up there?
Went to high school in the 60s, and I was very fortunate when I was in college that I would come home in the summers, and I had a job working in the mines underground. And it was a fantastic experience. Learned a lot about people, learned a lot about big institutions, the Anaconda Company being the institution.
Wow.
It was really, really a good experience.
How was it? Did things change quite a bit when you were in the mines in the 60s?
Well, it certainly weren't the days before the big mine fires and things like that. There were a lot of safety measures that were implemented, but it was still kind of the same old system. I was fortunate to be one of the last that were able to work underground, for example. And I wasn't a miner, I was a pumpman's assistant, so we cleaned out the pumps.
From when to when?
Oh, I did it 2 summers and a couple of Christmas vacations in the late 60s.
And what would you say, looking back, you learned from that?
Well, I learned a lot about how to relate to working people. And how difficult, the people that worked in the mines were hard-working people willing to take risks, you know, physical risks. Obviously did things that would jeopardize their health. Butte has this marvelous resiliency to it, and that's still true today, but in those days it really was the case.
When you look at yourself getting ready to head away from Butte for college, what were your key values?
That's an interesting question. When you're that age, you know, it's hard to know. I knew that I had a great opportunity when I got those jobs. I went to the University of Montana, which was also a great place to be in the late 60s, as you might guess. A lot of people concerned about the Vietnam War, a lot of issues that today are still around in terms of women's rights and individual privacy rights, things like that, were front and center in those days. I'm very fortunate in terms of the times that I have lived. I think we live in interesting times today, too.
In law school, anything surprise you there about what you learned? Those issues were front and center?
Well, I also was very fortunate there. I went to Gonzaga Law School in Spokane, and got a job working for legal services during the time I was a student.
Really?
So I worked the whole time I was a student at Gonzaga at legal services, working with low-income people and people below the poverty level and addressing some of the needs that those folks have. And those things haven't changed. I mean, the primary needs are family-related problems, child abuse and neglect kind of issues, housing, consumer protection. Those are still major needs for people that live below the poverty levels or even people that have modest means. And we see those issues in the courts all the time.
Let's talk about that for a minute in terms of its different implications. Access to justice, I don't remember the exact quote, but Jefferson said democracy was equal and exact access to justice for all, irrespective of means. We don't have that yet. How does that play out in the real world?
In Montana, we're in the process of doing a series of community forums around the state to try to talk to local communities and determine what the needs are. In Montana, there are 167,000 people who try to access the court system without an attorney.
167,000
people with either are of low income or modest means and aren't able to find, either because they can't afford or can't find an attorney to take their case. So providing justice to those folks continues to be one of the major challenges that we have in the court system.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court, Mike McGrath. Are there implications for a court caseload? Because it seems to me someone without an attorney, for one thing, it's not going to be as efficient a case to handle.
That's precisely right. And what we've done is a number of things to try to make it easier for people to use the court system and to allow trial judges, district judges primarily, to address those concerns. Oftentimes, people are there in cases that have, by law, higher priorities, child abuse and neglect cases, domestic relations cases. In criminal law, by the way, the caseload is increasing dramatically at the trial court level. So we have now, statewide, we have 50,000 cases filed in the district courts. We have 46 district court judges. You do the math, that shakes out to roughly a little more than 1,000 cases per judge, but it doesn't work that way. We have some communities, primarily urban communities, that are facing a crisis in terms of their caseload.
You're talking on a yearly basis?
Yes. Yearly basis, 50,000 cases. So in Yellowstone County, for example, the number of child abuse and neglect cases from the time that I joined the court, which was in 2009, through last year, quadrupled. It's four times the filings on those kinds of cases, child abuse and neglect. Those cases tend to take a lot of time. They take a priority in the system. So you add that to the situation where people are in the system representing themselves, and you have a real drain on the time that a trial judge has to devote to those caseloads,
sure,
particularly in the urban areas. So that's why I think it's fair to say, particularly in Yellowstone County, Missoula County, Cascade County, we really do have a crisis in terms of our ability to address the needs in those particular communities.
You mentioned the quadrupling of abuse and neglect cases since you came on the court. We did a show with Sarah Corbley from the state that was shocking in terms of the number of families where the state must intervene to protect the children from abuse. She and a law enforcement officer who was with her here tied it to meth substantially. Is that what we're talking about here in terms of the court cases often?
Yes. Well, the cases that come to the Montana Supreme Court tend to be the most serious cases where the government has found it necessary to actually terminate a person's parental rights. As you might guess, those are extremely emotional cases. They're very time-consuming, and they're difficult. They involve extremely difficult facts. Almost all of them are related to drug abuse, certainly alcohol abuse, drugs of choice, which the parents can't seem to shake, are meth addictions or heroin addictions. When you get parents that are in those situations, they're just not, often, not able to parent their children. And
sure,
it's the children, of course, who suffer. The first year I was on the Supreme Court, that was 2009, we had 31 parental termination cases that were appealed to the court. In 2014, we had 84. Last year, we had well north of 100, and we're going to exceed that number this year. There's not a week goes by that we don't have one, most often two, sometimes even three of those cases a week.
That sounds like, in addition to the trial courts being overwhelmed, your court is being overwhelmed, yes or no?
I wouldn't say that we're overwhelmed, but we certainly have a steady caseload. We get anywhere from 700 to 800 new case filings each year. In terms of direct appeals, we probably issue opinions in 350, maybe up to 400 cases a year.
But that seems like a heck of a lot. That's one a day.
It is, and we have 7 members of the court. But we're current. Our caseload is current. We're caught up. My goal is that we would be able to turn around a case within 6 months of the time we get it. Our average is closer to 90 days. We're under 100 days that we're turning cases around. So our court's in good shape. The place where we have what I would call a crisis in some communities is at the trial court level in our district court, cases of general jurisdiction.
Let's look at that. If you've got a crisis, what do you do about it? You have drug court that's supposed to take care of some cases that are drug-related but not necessarily family-related. Do we need more courts, and how much do they cost?
Well, we do need more courts. The caseloads numbers that are being driven by criminal court cases, many of those are drug cases, criminal cases, and these dependent neglect cases involving child abuse. They're time-consuming. They have priorities in the court system. It makes it very difficult for judges, if they have huge increased numbers of those cases, to then address civil cases, cases where businesses are trying to resolve a contract dispute or somebody has a property dispute and they're trying to get those cases resolved. They tend to get pushed back because the courts are dealing with these more higher priority, acute priority cases.
Right. So have you made recommendations for additional courts?
We are going to ask the legislature in 2017 to add 5 district court judges statewide. We have a need for 6 new judges in Billings, but we'll ask for 2 because I think that's the most realistic thing. We're going to ask for 1 in Missoula, 1 in Cascade, 1 in Flathead as well.
Let me just make a point going back to my interview with Sarah Corbley. This is a problem that starts with people in the field investigating abusive home situations, ends up before you, the law enforcement. It's a whole chain reaction. She said, if I remember correctly, that the caseload of her field workers was 4 times the recommended national average. Now, that's the people going into the home, trying to work with the parents, making a decision, so it's really important stuff. You're saying you need 6 courts, you're going to ask for 2. What's, by the way, the cost of 1 court?
The budget for the request that we're going to make is $2.5 million. But that's because we're going to phase in. Some of these judges would come in and be elected in 2018. 1 or 2 maybe would be appointed prior to that. So the overall cost is a little more. It's roughly $500,000 a biennium to add a judge.
Okay, someone listening might say, great, you got to have the judges to handle these cases. They need resolution. But the acceleration, if you put this on a curve, it's out of control. That is the problem. Would you
Correct.
Agree?
Absolutely.
So here we are. We're a state where we know people by their first names in the terms of government officials, business people. What do you say? I mean, you're a guy that's seen law enforcement from top to bottom. As a chief justice or a citizen, what should we be doing about this? Sounds like basically a narcotics problem, maybe with some other manifestations.
Well, it clearly is all connected, and you see it in the breakdown of family units. You see it in the number of law enforcement calls. Certainly the social workers are involved. I have no doubt that they're way underfunded and don't have people to address these issues. I think the next legislature is going to have to look at the whole system and see how all these issues are connected. I was involved when I was Attorney General with the Montana Meth Project, and our goal then was to try to raise awareness about meth addiction among young people. Not even once was our slogan, the Meth Project, still going on. It's still actually effective in terms of high school students and young people. They're aware about the dangers of meth. They understand it's comparable to heroin. And those numbers of users at that age are still relatively low. They were brought down in roughly 2005 we started. So we've had some impact there. We also were able to dry up the mom and pop meth labs, where, you know, right. where people were cooking their own. But now most of the meth comes in out of the country. It's distributed by the same distribution system that distribute marijuana or cocaine. But it's still quite cheap and it's readily available, and we're seeing more and more of our citizens getting addicted to those substances. What do we do now? Well, we need to, again, keep our awareness levels up that it's a problem. One of the things that's very effective is drug courts. So from my perspective as a judge, we have now 26 different drug courts across the state of Montana. We have people that are motivated to turn their lives around, but need a structured system to do that. And that's what drug courts do. And they are very effective. Nationwide, they're very effective. But they're time-consuming. They take a lot of time in terms of an actual judge's time, but also prosecutor, defense lawyer, probation officers, social workers. Again, the whole system is involved in these, but we are helping people turn their lives around, and it is making a difference. It has an impact, but the numbers are still overwhelming.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court, Mike McGrath. Well, then, obviously, appropriations for any of this is a legislative matter.
That's true. I think next session, the legislators are going to have to take a comprehensive look at the entire system. Law enforcement, social workers, courts, corrections has an impact on courts, Department of Health and Human Services.
As I mentioned in my introduction, you've seen a lot of the elephant. And often in multifaceted systems, the systems don't communicate too well together. They're honorable people, very focused on their task, but it's sort of vertical tunnels instead of cross communication. What's your sense for this legal system in that respect?
Well, I think by and large, the legal system works well. It's, you know, the courts sort of are the linchpin of a democratic society. If you don't have a way to resolve disputes based on the rule of law, having an independent magistrate make decisions, the entire society breaks down. So if you look at it from that point of view, we have an incredibly sophisticated society, and we do have a very good system of dispute resolution. We're not going to the barricades. People are not shooting each other. We don't have the kinds of civil disruptions that are occurring all across the world. And I would argue that that is because we have this very solid system of dispute resolution. Sometimes it's slow. It's certainly not perfect, but it works very well. And people, by and large, have confidence in our system. They may not win their case, but they know that they're going to get a case that's decided by an impartial magistrate, and the decision's going to be based on the rule of law. That's what we strive to do in the court system. I think nationwide, we're pretty good at that. Again, it's not perfect, but our entire society is held together, I think, because we have a way of resolving disputes based on the rule of law.
There was a survey, if I remember right, a couple of years ago about the Montana courts or the Supreme Court, which came out very favorably, supports what you're saying.
We try to measure our performances and try to figure out what we can do better periodically, and part of that was a survey of court users. 90% of the people that were surveyed, and these are people that are either the attorneys or clients or people involved in the system, thought they were treated fairly, thought that the courts made their decisions based on the facts and law of an individual case. And that's all you can ask for. And we get credit for, at least at the Supreme Court, getting our work done in an efficient manner. That's not happening, as I've mentioned, in terms of the trial court level in primarily our bigger communities.
In your description of why the judiciary has credibility, you said something like independent magistrate making a decision on the law and the facts in each case. Now, we have seen a phenomenon recently around the United States and in Montana of big money coming into judicial elections. I've been here 26, 27 years. It seems a first to me. am I seeing something unusual? And what do you think about it if it is unusual?
Well, it's certainly the trend. The U.S. Supreme Court decided a case a few years ago called Citizens United, which made the ruling that political expenditures, if you will, campaign expenditures, are free speech, and that corporations are allowed to donate unlimited money in certain ways to support elections. That's had a huge impact on the system that we have now. You know, there's a ongoing debate as what's the best way to select a judge. Is it, should there be elected judges? Some states have appointed judges. Some states have a hybrid kind of system. I don't think there's any perfect system. I've always been a proponent for elected members of the judiciary. I still am, tend to fall on that side. For several reasons. I mean, one, we judges tend to be a bit isolated, and it's a job that doesn't involve a lot of outside contact with people. You don't get out in the communities. If you have to face election periodically, you do get out. You get, especially at the Supreme Court, we're statewide elected. We have to travel. We have to get out into all parts of this state. We get to meet people. We get to see what's happening in those communities. We're not just isolated. I think that's really important. I think judges have to understand that we're accountable. We're just one branch of government, like the executive, like the legislature. All three branches are accountable to each other. And I think elected judges, by and large, is the best way to preserve that. The concern is now with these unlimited expenditures in judicial campaigns. Outside interests can come in. In 2014, for example, we had one seat up for election on the Montana Supreme Court. An incumbent was running. Both sides spent about $1 million apiece in that election.
We did a show, we usually interview candidates for the court. The challenger refused to come on this program. His name wasn't that well known in the state, and I was puzzled because we have a fair listening audience, and it's normal for people in politics to want to get exposure. And then I saw why, perhaps, he decided not to come on, because he had huge amounts of money coming in from out of state to pay for all of the ads that a guy could possibly want.
Yeah, more than $1 million, which in Montana is a very, very significant amount of money.
Raises a basic question, which went to the Supreme Court. I think the case was called Massey. We did a show with the coal mine owner, whose competitor, Mr. Blankenship, who's now, I think, serving time in jail, had put, numbers are rough, $3.2 million into a Supreme Court election, which the court then decided the case that Blankenship and this man were on opposite sides, and decided in Blankenship's favor. Went to the Supreme Court of the United States, 5-4 vote said inappropriate. Bad appearance of impropriety, I think.
Correct.
What's your sense for that?
Well, I think that you know, that case was well decided. It under the particular facts of that case, there was clearly an effort to influence a judge's decision, a Supreme Court justice's decision. The solution, of course, is transparency. If we're going to have elected judges, and it's going to be based on, you know, Montana has a pretty good system. I mean, we have to disclose all of our donors, and the amounts of money that people can donate to a campaign, be it a judicial race or legislative race or whatever, are limited, and they have to be disclosed. So that's at least one good precaution that we have in the system. It's when you get into a situation like these independent expenditure campaigns where their donors are not disclosed and they can spend unlimited amounts of money where we begin to have concerns. Montanans, I think, have to be vigilant and be aware of those kind of campaigns. We're seeing it in the governor's race already here in April 2016. There are independent ads for both major candidates for governor that neither of those candidates has any control over. We don't know who's paying them. We really don't know what their agendas are.
I appreciate the point about transparency. As a citizen, my view is transparency is not enough if there's a huge disparity in funding. Abraham Lincoln said, quote, "Allow the governed an equal voice in the government, and that only is self-government." Clearly, this is not an equal voice when money is considered speech. What's your sense for that basic ruling, Citizens United, as good law or not?
I think it was a mistake. We had a case a few years ago on our court called Western Tradition Partnership, which was a group that challenged the state law that we had that prohibited corporations, corporate entities, from donating to political campaigns. We'd had that law for 100 years. It was passed by a citizens initiative, I think, in 1912. And that law was challenged. We, on the Montana Supreme Court, I wrote the opinion that tried to distinguish our law from the Citizens United case based on at the time our law was passed, we had a history of corruption, a history of bribery. You look at all of the War of the Copper Kings and all of the history that we have in this state. Yeah. That's how we came to having that initiative passed. We've had open and fair elections for 100 years, particularly for judges. I mean, the state has an interest in ensuring that judicial elections are fair and both sides are properly able to present their cases. The Supreme Court overturned our case. They reversed it summarily. They didn't have an argument, and they just said that the Citizens United case controls. We thought we could distinguish it. Obviously, we were unable to do that, and the court said Citizens United is the law of the land. I think it's going to be the law of the land now, and I do think it changes particularly judicial elections and how they're financed and how they're run. And I think people need to be aware of when they see ads or hear about ads for Supreme Court candidates that they know if it's the candidate that's making this ad or is this somebody else that has some interest that maybe we don't know about.
In describing our judicial system, it seemed to me you were saying that citizens ultimately have confidence in an independent, fair judiciary, and that is central to our cohesiveness as a nation. I think you basically said that. Do you feel that money coming into elections, big bucks coming into judicial elections, ultimately jeopardizes that basic confidence of the citizenry?
Well, I think it has the potential for that. I hope that that's not the case. It's interesting, you look at the presidential election this year, that money doesn't seem to have been a factor in terms of either the Republican candidate or the Democratic candidate that's the front runner. So who knows? I think people may be able to see through this, and it may be that in the long run, people, again, because of transparency, people will understand that there's a difference. We'll see.
Chief Justice McGrath, I very much forget to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week.
Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studio. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.